WTOP, this is Jason.
Hey, Jason, it's Joan Osborne calling.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
I am great. It's an absolute honor to talk to you. Have you ever been to the Birchmere?
Oh, yeah. We played the Birchmere probably a dozen times.
It's such a good spot, isn't it?
Yeah, I really love it.
What can we expect to hear? Is it going to be sort of stuff off of Love and Hate? Is it some of your older stuff, a little of both?
Yeah, well, I like to try to mix it up and do, you know, things off of the recent album Love and Hate. We've been doing some stuff off of the Bring It On Home album, which is the blues cover album. And I also, of course, dip into the Relish record because we just did a 20th anniversary re-release of the Relish album. And we recently did a residency at the Carlisle in New York City doing nothing but Bob Dylan songs. So we're probably going to bust out several Bob Dylan songs as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How did that gig come about? Because it was at the Carlisle in New York. The whole thing was called the Songs of Bob Dylan. What all sort of stuff did you sing?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because it's, you know, the room itself is more of a cabaret room. It's a place where people like, you know, Bobby Short and
right.
Andrea Marcovici do the songs of Cole Porter or things like that. So, you know, I wanted to do something that was different than my normal show. I wanted to be respectful of the history of the room, but I didn't want to do, you know, a bunch of Gershwin songs because that's not really my thing. So I was trying to figure out a way to do something special, and we hit upon the idea of doing all Bob Dylan songs. And it was really fun. You know, we did everything from Highway 61 Revisited to some of these really gentle, beautiful love songs that he has, like Buckets of Rain or You're Gonna Be Lonesome When You Go. And it was great. You know, it was funny because when the musicians, Keith and Jack and I were rehearsing, in the middle of each song, we would just sort of stop and look at each other and go like, wow, that's a really great song. So every time. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Really fun.
Yeah, didn't I see a video also, I don't know if it was from the Bob Dylan package up in New York, but I think I've seen some video of you somewhere doing To Make You Feel My Love. That was a Dylan song.
Yeah, I actually recorded that for the Righteous Love record years and years ago. So I have a little bit of a history of doing stuff of his, you know, as many people do. I mean, you know, he's one of the most covered writers out there. But, you know, we wanted to do something a little different. So this is the first time that we did an all Bob Dylan show. We're not planning to do the all Bob Dylan show at the Birchmere. We're going to do, you know, original songs as well. But we'll probably
maybe get one,
you know,
or two.
Maybe those songs. Oh, yeah.
Maybe one Dylan song.
Two, maybe three.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So they'll be sprinkled in there. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So in addition to New York, don't you have some upcoming residencies in Hawaii or Tokyo? Explain what you got going on.
Yeah, we're going to be doing, there's a new Blue Note club in Honolulu on Waikiki Beach.
Wow.
And we are booked in there for a week. So I'm going to take advantage of that and bring my daughter and, you know, hang on the beach with her in Waikiki for a week during the day. And then at night we'll do our shows at the Blue Note Club.
Not a bad gig. Not a bad gig.
Yeah, not a bad gig. I know. You know, these definitely some of the perks. And then from there, we are going to Tokyo, and we're hoping to arrive a few days early in Tokyo, not only because you have to acclimatize because the time change is really different,
right.
But also to kind of do a little bit of, you know, sightseeing. I really want to go to Kyoto. I haven't been there in many years and you know, see the temples and just kind of soak up a little bit of Japanese culture and stuff before the gigs begin. So I'm very excited about that.
So from Hawaii to Japan, just sort of bounce your way around the world there. That's awesome, man. That you've come.
I know, I just keep heading west and then get back home. Yeah.
Not fall off the end of the earth. You know, all these cities all over the place. You've come a long way from your roots in Kentucky. Take me back to when you first got started. When were you a kid when you started singing, or when did you start?
Well, yeah, I used to sing as a kid, and I sang in school, and I grew up in a very small town called Anchorage, Kentucky, but we had a wonderful music teacher there, and her name was Carolyn Browning, and she really challenged the kids to do some fairly complicated, you know, multi-part harmonies, like four and five and six-part harmonies, and I was part of a small singing group at the school that did madrigal, old English madrigal tunes at Christmas time, and... And, you know, this teacher really she sort of was very supportive of me and really gave me a lot of encouragement. So I feel like that was a bit of a good foundation for me to learn how to sing harmonies and just to be, you know, to practice singing at that point in my life when I was, you know, 11 to 12 years old. But I didn't really do anything when I was in high school or the beginning of college, and I didn't get into singing again until I was in my early 20s in New York.
Yeah, wasn't ironically, isn't what brought you to New York was you were going to film school at NYU, right?
That's right. I was studying filmmaking at NYU, and I thought I was going to become a documentary filmmaker.
Wow.
But I just kind of accidentally, fell into the music scene that was going on there. And there was a lot of great music happening in the clubs and small venues at that time. It was a total accident that I got involved in it. But I started to make a lot of friends and meet a lot of other musicians and slowly, after much pestering, was able to land my first job singing at one of these clubs and sort of built it from there and went from doing open mic nights for free to after a couple of years to playing five and six nights a week in New York City.
I want to go into the open mic night real quick, but first I'm curious about the Joan Osborne aspiring documentary filmmaker in the late 80s. did you have any idols? Were you watching like Errol Morris stuff and you said, hey, I want to do a doc filmmaking or was it fiction
I did like Errol Morris and I had some really excellent teachers at NYU and Barbara Koppel was an idol of mine who made the great film Harlan County, USA.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to, the more documentaries I saw, the more I really got engaged by them and thought, well, you could never make this stuff up that people are making these documentary films about. You know,
right.
The truth is stranger than fiction. And the characters that you meet in documentary films seemed to me like they were much deeper and more interesting than anybody you could make up as a fiction film. So I really got excited by it and got the bug for it.
But somehow you shifted to the live music scene, the open mic nights. What was it a Billie Holiday song I read or what got you
That's
out on
right.
the
yeah? I was living in New York, and there was a guy in my building who invited me to go out for a drink with him. And we just happened to live on a street where there was a blues bar on the corner called the Abilene Cafe. And so that we just went there for a drink. And this was fairly late at night, and there had been a band playing, but they were finished. But the piano player was still there playing just for himself and the handful of people who were still in this bar. And the guy who I was with dared me to go up and sing a song with the piano player and said, I will buy these drinks if you will go up and sing a song with him. So I did. And the song that the piano player and I both knew was God Bless the Child, which is a Billie Holiday song.
Of course.
And so I did that. And, the piano player was like, oh, you know, that's pretty good. You should come back on Tuesday nights. We have an open mic night here every Tuesday. So I started doing that. I started going and, you know, signing up on the sign-up sheet and waiting around and listening to other people and then getting up on stage and doing one or two blues songs. And from that, I met a lot of people and yeah. found out that there were other open mic nights and started going into hearing bands and just started really getting into the music scene that was happening in New York at the time.
What was the name of the open mic place? Do you remember?
It was called the Abilene, the Abilene Cafe.
Okay.
Like Abilene, Texas.
Gotcha. All right. And then so you started meeting all these people and suddenly you get, a record deal. And lo and behold, here comes Relish.
It wasn't exactly suddenly that I got a record deal. But,
there's no such thing as an overnight success.
Yeah, the classic story of, 3 years later, you have an overnight success.
Yeah, exactly.
But for me, I was having success every night as far as I was concerned because I was, either going out with friends to hear great music or going and seeing friends' bands play or playing myself and, meeting a lot of great people. And it was a very social atmosphere and, I made some great friends. And for me, it's coming from this little town in Kentucky, just to like get on stage in New York City and have people actually pay attention and like what I was doing. And, that felt like a big success even at that level to me. So it's all been success from that point on.
Absolutely. And just moving chronologically a little bit then, so you're doing your 3 years of overnight success. All of a sudden, Relish arrives, and all of us, you know, you become a household name. We all know it and love it. It goes like multi-platinum. You get nominated for all these Grammys. Where were you when you heard One of Us on the radio the first time?
I'm sure that I was in a van on my way to a gig when we heard One of Us on the radio for the first time. I think it might have been in Georgia because we were on our way to play a gig in Atlanta. And I think the pop station in Atlanta had just started playing it. And really, somebody there was a believer and they were playing it a lot. So I believe I was on a highway somewhere in Georgia in a van with my band. And that was probably the first time I heard it on the radio.
I think you were a stranger on a bus, but I'll take the van. I'll take the van. That sounds like a likely story. All these years later, what did those lyrics mean to you? I mean, people have dissected them for like 20 years now, but you know, every time you sing it, what does the song mean to you now?
Well, you know, the thing that I think connects me to the song and connects people to the song is that it's not telling you what you're supposed to think. It's asking you to search yourself for what you believe. And I think that's the strength of the song, is that it invites people in and asks them what they think and what they believe and what feels right to them. So it sparks a lot of discussion in that way. And for me, the images that I keep coming up with are things like the image of the Good Samaritan, you know, the person who stopped and helped, you know, someone by the side of the road who needed assistance.
Of course.
And that was Jesus, and it sort of illustrates the proverb that as you I'm not going to say this correctly, but as you treat the least of my children, so you treat me. So it's a invitation to see, you know, the holy and the godly in every person, and I feel like that's something that we all can do and can be reminded of, and that's what I tend to take away from it. And as I sing it, you know, night after night, I really feel like people connect with it, and we've been, you know, my musical partner Keith Cotton has created this beautiful stripped down solo piano arrangement of the song, which is probably what we'll be doing down at the Birchmere, and it really focuses on the lyrics, and it's a really beautiful version, and you know, people really get carried away and get choked up by it, so it still has a lot of power, and I don't get tired of singing it ever.
Yeah, I'm sure every radio interview you do, they say, "Do you ever get tired of singing that?" I am not gonna ask you that, but I mean, along similar lines though, is it crazy to think you have sort of that? I mean, you and every other artist out there has sort of that career song that's gonna follow you everywhere you go. It'll be the first line in the obit, hopefully decades from now. But you know what I mean? Like, what's it like to be attached to a song like that?
Well, I have to say, you know, that song has opened up doors for me that I, you know, probably would never have opened if I didn't have a song that had that kind of recognition and that sort of global moment, you know, because it was a hit not just in the U.S., but places like Israel and Australia and India, and, you know, it allowed a lot of people to, you know, be introduced to me, and there were a lot of opportunities that I had because of the success of that song, which I'm nothing but grateful for. And, you know, if there's one song that you have to be attached to, that's a pretty good one. You know,
yeah.
You could have had, you know, something that like Rump Shaker or something that's not super deep.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know,
hey, a boom, 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 and a zoom, zoom. That's pretty deep.
Yeah.
No.
You know, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
If you have a song you're attached to, that's a pretty good
right.
one, I think.
One with a little bit of meaning to it, not just the, you know, a dance song. I got you. But other than that, you mean, since then, you said it's opened a lot of doors. You've sort of, you know, stretch the bounds of different genres. I mean, I know you played with the Funk Brothers and on that there you go, got back to your documentary side. You did a little,
yeah.
You did a little country at the Opry and the Dixie Chicks. And then you mentioned the blues album. You know what, do you have sort of a genre or style you're sort of, most fond of currently, or do you like shifting back and forth?
Well, to me, I feel like the genre lines are a little bit, I mean, they're a little bit arbitrary for me, because I feel like soul music, which is what I try to do, you know, that's just music that reaches your soul, and it can be you know, R&B music, or it can be country music, or it can be pop music. It can be a lot of different styles, but it reaches down to your soul and reaches a part of you that nothing else can touch. And so that's what I would pick is that kind of music, no matter what genre you want to assign it to.
It's absolutely true, and I feel like the further and further we go down this road of music, I feel like all the lines are getting more blurred anyway, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Trigger Hippie, the Black Crowes drummer. You're putting out an album in the fall.
Yeah, we are a stone rock and roll band.
Nice,
and it's really really fun. We put our first record out in 2014 and toured behind that a little bit and got a lot of really great response from that. And at this point, we're writing more songs and heading back into the studio and hoping to have something out again either by the end of the year or the beginning of next year. And that's a really, really fun thing. That's one of the cool things about doing music is that, you know, you're able to... I mean, I could just do Joan Osborne things, you know, for the rest of my life, and that would be great. But because I've met so many great people and collaborated with so many interesting people over the years, you're able to do these, you know, side projects or whatever you want to call them and really kind of change it up, and it keeps things fresh for everybody, and it's just fun. It's like anything you can think of, anything you can make happen, you can do. And I'm so fortunate that I've got an audience that's interested and comes out to see the different things that I'm involved in.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully that audience comes back out to the Birchmere. Let's bring it full circle here, and then we'll let you run. You know, why should our D.C. area listeners come out to see this show? Let's say they hear this interview, they remember, they say, oh, I remember her, I like her stuff. Why should they come out to this particular show at the Birchmere?
Well, because I have brought this amazing musician with me, Mr. Keith Cotton, and he's an incredible player, and we've taken these songs that people might know from the full band versions, and we've stripped them down to their bare essence, and it's a very intimate show. It's a very special show for us to do. The audiences that we've done this show for have really, really loved it, and it's a little bit more conversational. You get to, like, talk to people a little bit more, and it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit of a cliche, but it's kind of like you're all sitting around the living room together, and it's really, really fun. So I think for people who are fans of ours, or even people who don't know about it, it's a really good show and a really great way to hear this music.
Awesome. Joan Osborne, thanks so much for taking the time. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure, Jason. Thanks.
Definitely. And just as a reminder, she's coming Thursday to the Birchmere in Alexandria. Check it out. Thanks, Joan.
All right. Thank you. Take care.